Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A laptop for every child and internet access for everyone. These are goals shared by policymakers and philanthropists working in this country and around the world. The Obama administration is making it a priority to extend broadband access nationwide. And the assumption is that not having access to computer technology at home compounds the educational disparities between rich and poor, and that providing computers to students at home will reduce these disparities. But there's actually very little evidence that it definitely would. In fact, a new study shows that access to a home computer and the internet among low-income students could actually have a negative effect on their schoolwork. Joining me now is the co-author of that study, Jacob Vigdor, who's a professor of public policy and economics at Duke University. The study is called Scaling the Digital Divide. Jacob Vigdor, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
You studied the arrival of broadband service in North Carolina and its effect on middle school test scores. Tell me what you found.
Well, what we found is that the arrival of broadband service in a student's zip code area was associated with a modest but statistically significant decline in their reading and math test scores.
How do you explain that?
Well, I think to explain it, you have to think about two competing visions of what a computer is. To a lot of people, the computer is the key to being a productive worker in the 21st century. The other way to think about a computer is that it's something that helps you entertain yourself. And I think for the kinds of people that we're talking about here, so we're talking about kids in 5th through 8th grade, they're 10 to 13 years old, the computer is more along the lines of the latter function than the former. So while the adults in the room look at the computer and see something that is going to help these kids do their schoolwork, learn faster, learn better, be smarter people when they're adults, a child looks at that same computer and sees something that they use to play games, they use to communicate with their friends. Using it for schoolwork is not necessarily the first thing that comes to mind. When you introduce broadband access, which really expands the possibilities of using the computer to basically just to goof off, that's what kids use it for.
You're not the only researcher to find this disparity, right?
That's right. There have been several other studies out there of the impact of broadband access, the impact of computers on kids. Some of them look at what happens when you bring computers into the classroom. Some of them look at computers in the home. Some of them look at the broadband access at home or in school. But by and large, there just isn't a lot of evidence out there to back up these assertions that the arrival of computer technology has been a great boon to kids' learning.
But this sounds so unfair and so much like a double-edged sword, because low-income kids are going to be left behind if they don't have access to computers and broadband, but you're saying it could actually have a negative impact if they do.
That's right. That's right. I think that one thing that you have to keep in mind for the population that we're talking about, we're studying the impact of broadband access in a period of time where somewhere around 90% of the kids in our study who are middle school students in North Carolina, more than 90% of them have a computer at home. So a computer itself is no longer the domain of the wealthy. The technology has really diffused. The trouble is that the technology is being put to different uses in different kinds of homes. And I think that one thing that makes a big difference so far as we found in how broadband access impacts kids, it all depends on who's there to help the child learn how to use the computer to be productive. In a household where you have college-educated parents who know how to use productivity software, who know how to do research online, kids can learn how to do that. In households that don't have access to those kinds of parental resources, that kind of learning doesn't take place, and the computer by default becomes a tool for having fun.
Listeners, any parents or teachers want to weigh in on this apparent double-edged sword? Do you see providing internet access to your school-age child as anything but positive? Anybody who might have contact with both kind of low-income households and higher-income households to see any disparate effects? 212-433-WNYC, 433 9692. We just have a few minutes for this, but let's take a call from John in Brooklyn. John, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to make the point that I'm 34, and I grew up in a household where my parents were completely computer illiterate. My mother couldn't figure out how to work the caps lock. And I played my computer just to get games to work, and I picked up skills just from the hours of fiddling with the complicated DOS controls, spending a long time on tech support lines to figure out how to get the internet connections to work. Now, like, that, my motivation wasn't to become educated, but now I know how to work a computer better than most people in my office.
Therefore,
and
what?
Just, like, when, like, there's a little Windows problem and a one piece of software.
Yeah, but I mean, therefore what, in terms of public policy?
You learn skills from, the entertainment motivates you to fiddle with the computer, and you get skills that aren't measured in math and reading scores that are useful in the job market.
John, thank you. And I wonder, because you just measured test scores in relation to low-income households where broadband became available, Professor, did you see positive outcomes for low-income students in other areas outside of test scores?
We don't have much capacity to measure some of those other outcomes. There have been other studies that assert that things like hand-eye coordination improves and all that. There are a couple things that you have to keep in mind. I could tell a story very similar to John. I'm 38 years old. I had a computer when I was growing up, and I don't think it really harmed me. There's a difference between a computer today and a computer in the 1980s. To figure out how to make a computer do anything in the 1980s, you had to learn a lot. Nowadays, you can get a computer out of the box and not learn a thing. Just click on a little icon on the screen, and you're off on the internet. It's become a much more idiot-proof product than it used to be. So I think the capacity of the computer just to make people learn in order to do the goofing off that they want to do, it's not necessary to do the learning anymore. I mean, that's sort of the one of the wonderful things about technology, but it's also one of the things that you have to keep in mind when considering whether this is a good or a bad thing for kids.
Matt in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. You're a teacher, Matt?
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Professor.
Hi.
I work at a Title I school on the Lower East Side, and most of my kids don't have computers, let alone internet access at home. And in our school itself, we're really struggling to get the equipment. So I take exception to the argument respectfully. As a literacy teacher, that's what I do. Computers are the tool. And if Mayor Bloomberg wanted to really do something for the city of New York's children, he put a netbook in every kid's hand. Thank you very much. Love the show.
Thank you. Matt?
Yeah.
Well, would you recommend, Professor, as a matter of public policy, that Mayor Bloomberg not put a netbook in every kid's hand?
I think that everybody needs to keep one thing in mind. Back when I was in the early grades, back in the 1970s, there was no computer technology whatsoever. So if you think that computer technology is somehow the key to expanding literacy, you would think that the kids in school these days would be head and shoulders above what kids were doing back in the 1970s in the pre-computer era. And they're not. So the idea that this is some sort of magic device that is so much better than teachers at getting the job of teaching fundamental literacy and numeracy to kids, then why aren't we a quantum leap above what the performance of kids was back in the 1970s and the early 1980s when there were no computers in schools?
Although that literacy teacher said he desperately wants those computers for his low-income students. At the national policy level, the Obama administration has a national broadband plan, as you know, and they announced last month a $1 billion allocation to extend broadband internet access nationwide, and that's part of a $7 billion program in the stimulus to expand broadband. That's a lot of money. So is this an unwise investment, in your opinion, of public funds?
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, you know, because the study that really demonstrated that broadband in schools hasn't accomplished very much was actually written by a person, Austin Goolsbee, who's actually working for Obama now on the Council of Economic Advisers. I think it's an easy message to give. It's an easy message to receive that broadband in schools seems like, you know, a great idea. For some kids, it probably is. But for the kids that you really worry about, the kids who are really struggling, really falling behind, the skills that they need are not, first of all, before you get them the skills to use the internet to go look stuff up online or to help them do their homework, the first thing that they need is they need help with fundamental reading and fundamental numeracy. The computer is not necessarily a wonderful tool for that. I think that you do run the risk by introducing kids to this technology that you put these fundamental skills in the back seat.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that almost all our callers are hostile to your premise, and we've taken a few of them. So I'm going to take the one who's calling who says she has experience that backs you up, and that's Mary in Cleveland. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on the air.
Go ahead.
I'm a designer, and I just finished a project in a poor neighborhood here in Cleveland where we were developing an urban design for this district, and we're working with members of the community. And some of them were kids, and we were only given access to the computers that these kids often get, and they were these small HP computers that could really only go online, do a little bit of word processing. They were so awful to work with. They were such a pain to use. Even the kids had a tough time just managing the keyboard.
So the little netbooks themselves were a bad idea. If they were if they were bigger computers, do you think it would have been a different experience?
Well, if we'd had a lab with good software, we could have taught them something, but that's a massive investment.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, we could have done, if they'd taken the same money that they'd spent on those little netbooks and bought us metal rulers and the right paper, and we were in a facility where we could really do the design work necessary, I think the kids would have had a richer experience.
Mm-hmm. Mary, thank you for your call. And we're going to leave it there with Jacob Vigdor, professor of public policy and economics at Duke University. He did the study called Scaling the Digital Divide. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the authors of a new book called Around the World in 80 Diets. It's arranged in ascending order by calorie count. Stay with us.